Welcome back to the Matter of Facts podcast on the Prepper Broadcasting Network. We talk prepping, guns, and politics every week on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Go check out our content at mwfpodcast.com on Facebook or Instagram. You can support us via Patreon or by checking out our affiliate partners. I'm your host, Phil Rabley, and my co-host, Andrew Bobo, is on the other side of the mic, and here's your show. Welcome back to the Matter of Facts podcast. Raising Values went out for the first time on YouTube several days ago. A lot of good response from it. But as I promised, I swore I had to convince several people that this was not the Matter of Facts podcast going away or that Andrew had been fired. I mean, so he's back and we're back and it's Matter of Facts again. I'm true to my word.
Well, I mean, you trade in for a better looking co-host.
See, I didn't really trade in. What I did was like keep the car that's paid off and reliable and works and gives me enjoyment. And I added a much prettier, higher maintenance model to the fleet. I'm going to get slapped in the back of the head for that comment. I can just see it now. But, Andrew, yes, you have many fans, and they were very concerned about the fact that you and or this podcast were going away, which I swore to them was not the case.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Feels nice to be loved.
That being said, the title is The Resurgence of the Armed American. And I thought what would make for an interesting show is for Andrew and I to kind of talk about like the change in the gun community that the two of us have seen since we were, say, ostensibly old enough to handle firearms. I mean, Andrew, you're 38, 39 now?
Yeah, 38.
38 years old. So it's been 20 years since you could legally purchase your own firearms. I'm 40. It's been 22 years for me. And like, I was just curious, and we've got some talking points to go through here in a minute, but like, what's your general impression of what the firearms community, if you want to lump into that, the Second Amendment community, or take the question as you will, what's changed in 20 years?
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
That's the end of the show, guys. Matter of Facts podcast heading out.
See you later. No, I think I really feel like the gun community is more divided than ever. It's sad to say, but I really see it, especially like there's a reason, like when I got off Facebook, I was in a couple different, firearm groups with the like AR-15 stuff and all, you know, all kinds of crap. And I've said it on the show before. And the one thing that just annoys the crap out of me is when somebody, they post their gun online, and they're like, hey, this is my first rifle. I just built it. Or, hey, I just bought it, saved up the money and got this. And, you know, it wasn't a name brand. I mean, it was a name brand, but maybe it wasn't something like Daniel Defense or, you know, something high end, you know. And so they didn't spend, you know, $15,000 to $2,000 on that rifle. And then they would post it being super proud, saying, hey, what kind of optic should I get? What sling should I get? What more gear should I get? What ammo do you recommend? How many mags do you have? All this crap. And people would sit there and they would dog on them because they're like, well, it doesn't say Daniel Defense. It's an Anderson Manufacturing lower. You're going to have so many issues with it, this, this, and this, and just going on and just completely dogging them. And to me, that's 100% the opposite direction where we should go. And I remember replying, being like, hey, cool, nice rifle. And then basically just saying, hey, like, I don't care what you're shooting. It goes back to a pistol, like a high point. I mean, honestly, like, I don't trust them. But if all you can afford is a high point, but you train with it, and you've actually, like, you feel like it's reliable, but you've put it through some rounds, and you're accurate with it, honestly, I don't care what you're shooting as long as you're accurate and you're safe and you know the fundamentals and you try to train with it and everything like that. Like, you can always upgrade your gun over time, but you have people that just dog on people, and I really feel like we're divided as a community, and because we're divided, the 2A community, honestly, we're done. We haven't been taken out to the pasture and shot yet. But they're taking our legs out from under us a little bit at a time, and it's only a matter of time before we get the final axe. And you're going to have people on one side saying, hey, that's crap, and they're going to fight for it, and they're going to want to try to fight for it, which is great, but it might be a little bit too late. And then you got the other side going, well, they didn't come after my shotgun, my double barrel shotgun, or they didn't come after this, so you know what? We can do away with the AR-15. We don't need those scary assault weapons and tactical shotguns and all this other crap. And, you know, the sniper rifles or whatever term the mainstream media comes up with. And to me, that's the downside of our rights. I mean, you're already seeing it. You see it all the time when people, you have the FUDs that are like, well, I support the Second Amendment, but no, there is no but. You either don't or you do. And you either want full on where I can freaking have a tank and, you know, a plane and all this crap and bombs and grenades and I want all this crap. Or you don't support it at all. Like, you're either 100% with your fundamental rights, you're either 100% in or you're not. Like, you're against human rights altogether. Like, I don't see it. There's no gray area. And I just feel like that's where the downside is. And as a community, like, we need to come together.
I don't want to accuse you of being a Debbie Downer, but you really stomped on me on that one.
Huh.
Because I can't disagree with you. I mean, that's there. In some ways, I feel like it's more and less prevalent than it used to be.
I mean, let alone just the laws that are in the last 20 years, the laws that have changed. And in some states, it's great. Some laws have changed for the better. In some states, they've went downhill completely, like the opposite direction. And that's scary. I mean, you look at the ATF and how much power the ATF has gathered in the last 20 years or so. And ever since they've been formed, it's like they're slowly, at one little bit at a time, they're gaining power. And now they have the ability to just rewrite rules, because honestly, like, I blame Trump for that. Like, I wasn't the biggest Trump fan, but he would be a hell of a lot better than who we have now. But the issue with Trump is what I had is he basically gave the, and I remember us talking about it. I don't know if it was on the show or not, but I remember just saying, like, when he was like, hey, we need to, you know, I want to ban bump stocks. ATF, look at how to ban them. I needed you to reclassify them. It's like, you do that, that's a slippery slope. What else are they going to try to do? And that opened the door. As soon as he gave them approval, they got presidential approval to reclassify basically any rule they want. And now they're going full ham, like they're going after everything right now. And it's ridiculous. Well,
in specific, just to the bump stock ban, like, let's think about where that went. Because back then, I made a lot of hay and pissed off a lot of people by saying, guys, this is going to, you know, like, the consensus from the gun community seemed to be bump stocks are stupid, not the hill I want to die on. And I said over and over and over again, pick a hill, we're going to get to it eventually. Because the language they're using is way too flexible and way too malleable, and it's going to move. The goalpost is going to move. It's not going to stay at bump stocks. So we either fight them to the death on this, legislatively, in the courts, with the law, or we're inviting more. And we now have force reset triggers being called machine gun parts. I mean, the ATF has literally tried to friggin', like, hem people up over shoelaces and paperclips and nonsense. They've got a federal lawsuit against a guy who's a YouTuber right now for the auto key cards. Like, they didn't stop at bump stocks. And that's kind of been my point, is people do not understand or appreciate the fact that when you have a federal agency that has the ability to reinterpret, in big old air quotes, a federal law at their will and apply it selectively as they see fit with very little oversight and very little pushback, they have the ability to slap anyone in the country that colors the least little bit out of the lines with decades in jail and millions of dollars in fines. And that is if that is not designed and intended to cool exercise of the Second Amendment, I don't know what is. So the answer always was what I think is we're now seeing with all the action in the court around the pistol brace and all the action in the court around the frame and receiver rules and everything else that's going on. The answer always was every time they put their toe over the line, stomp on it, break their damn feet.
Do not allow them 1 millimeter. Don't tolerate one infringement, because if you do, you get two tomorrow.
Well,
and that has been that is like, I understand that, like, my political ideals are not everyone's cup of tea, but I've always said government is like fire. It can keep you warm. It can burn your house to the ground. When you have fire in a fireplace, it does a job and it does it well. But you don't let the fire get 2 inches out of the fireplace. Say, well, it's only 2 inches out of the fireplace. It'll be fine there, because then it burns your whole damn house down. You have to keep the fire in the fireplace. And if it gets at least a little bit out of line, you extinguish it or you put it back in the fireplace. That is the only way to deal with the government. That's the only way to deal with the state and its agents. If they get the least little bit out of where they're supposed to be or out of whack, you friggin' deal with the problem immediately and viciously. Because if you don't, it burns the house down. And if anybody doesn't like that analogy or thinks that's over the line, you need to research your own history.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is with the ATF and just the laws and everything like that. I mean, we've gotten to where we've gotten with the laws and the anti-freedoms and all that stuff, because over the last, I mean, longer than 20 years, but they've been able, the government comes in, the anti-gun community comes in, something happens, and then they're like, well, we just want to pass this law. It doesn't affect this. It just affects this. Like, do it for the children, do it for the community, blah, blah, blah. And they keep using that excuse over and over again. And then you got the bleeding hearts that are like, you know what? People don't need this. And then they take the little slice out of the pie. Or, you know, if you can, you can do the analogy of the frog in the water in the pot. You know, they turn the heat up just a little bit more. Because what's going to happen is, if you throw a frog in a boiling pot of water, it's going to probably attempt to jump out and escape. If you slowly turn up the heat, that frog is just going to boil and it's just not going to know it. And then it eventually dies. But anyway, that's how we got the Gun Control Act, and that's how we got the NFA, is because they were like, hey, you know, we have these machine guns, the destructible devices, suppressors. And suppressors, I was reading that it was more of a like a DNR. Like, they were afraid of poaching. It had nothing to do with, like, murders and all that stuff. It was, hey, these are pretty, you know, they silence the shot, and they basically lied to the community saying what it does. And they're like, well, it's for poaching. People are going to use it for poaching. And it's not. It's actually one of the best used tools for hunting, because it saves your hearing.
Mm-hmm. You want to know what the truly maddening part of the National Firearms Act is? Before we go to Chad's comment down here, which I think bears upon this whole conversation. The most maddening part of the National Firearms Act is 2 years after it was passed, when it wound up right back in the Supreme Court's lap, because two moonshiners had gotten caught with a sawed-off shotgun, and they won in the lower district court. The National Firearms Act was found to be unconstitutional, because how the hell could it not be? And the government, doing what the government does, used some of our money to friggin' push their BS, and they appealed it and wound up right back in the Supreme Court. The government's lawyers told the judge, and the judge agreed. Now, steel yourself, see if this doesn't give you an aneurysm. That short-barreled rifles and short-barreled shotguns and machine guns and silencers were not useful to the militia. Therefore, they were not protected by the Second Amendment. Now, I have two massive problems with that analogy. First of all, machine guns and short-barreled freaking machine guns and trench shotguns and silencers were absolutely used in World War I, which it just happened not even a generation before this fucking bullcrap was passed. So, not useful to the militia, but useful to a standing army. I have a real hard time, like, torquing my brain around that distinction they somehow made. But even better is the fact that, how many times have you heard, Andrew, over the years, we have to get weapons of war off the streets? ARs and AKs and assault weapons, they're all weapons of war. The only way the National Firearms Act survived its initial kick in the teeth was by saying these things were not useful to the militia. They were not weapons of war. So, in the world we live in the political legal bullcrap we live in. A freaking belt-bed machine gun is not useful to the militia, but a semi-automatic rifle is a weapon of war. And if anyone can keep a straight face and explain that stupidity to me, I am all ears. But to me, it just sounds like a judge that was asleep, bribed, or freaking drunk at the bench, and a government lawyer doing what government lawyers do, which is lie, because their argument made no friggin' sense on the face of it. It never did. It was never going to. Now, I'm going to have to remember to clip that out because that's going to be a good fill rant. Chevron deference. Are you familiar with this legal principle, Andrew?
Yes, but go ahead and talk about it.
I'll make it real short and sweet. Basically, the state tells the judge it's not unconstitutional, and the judge just takes their word for it. That's like there's a lot of legalese around it, but that's in general how it works. And if that sounds insane when we consider the fact that like the separation of powers like actively employs the judiciary to keep an eye on the executive branch and make sure that they're doing their jobs properly and they're not exceeding their authority. Like that is the whole point of checks and balances. So when the executive branch via one of the alphabet agencies tells the judge, oh no, it's on the up and up, and the judge says, two thumbs up, back to the golf course for me, I just get a little bit frustrating. A little bit like I should have added some whiskey to this coffee. I'm not sure if that would enhance the violence or just mellow me out, but there should definitely be booze when I discuss government and legalese.
Yeah, I remember the original assault weapons ban as well. But that's the thing, is that's their... They keep going back to that assault weapons ban, and they keep bringing up the statistics, like, hey, you know, the shootings have been lower, this, and this. And honestly, if you look at it, no, they were not. Like, the assault weapons ban did zero for anything, for any crime lowering at all. It did zero. Like, and that's the thing, is you can't, you're regulating the law-abiding people. You're not regulating the criminals, because the criminals don't follow laws. And that's a thing, too, is you have, say we go back to short-barreled shotguns and short-barreled rifles and all that stuff. Legal, like, you could just, I mean, AR pistols, like, I mean, they're technically, I mean, they're basically, I mean, they're a pistol legally, but they're basically a short-barreled rifle. But the thing is, though, is they're all worried about, oh, they're more concealable, they're more deadly, which I don't see how they're more deadly. But they sit there and it's like, well, you have somebody who is either, whether it's a short barrel or not, you have them walking in to a place and they're committing a crime. They're committing murder. That is already a law. Like, you cannot commit murder. But they sit there and they're like, well, if we pass these laws and limit the rights of the people, crime will go down. But then crime doesn't go down because criminals don't follow laws. And I think we all know that.
But here's the two things before we get in. Well, one thing, and then I want to get into the first of these talking points, which is encouraging. 20 minutes into the show, you've had me like ready to throw my desktop across the room. So I need some.
You started it.
I need some positivity in my life. But, like, despite what anybody will tell you, the violent crime statistics from 1994 to 2004, the violent crime rate actually went down across the board. It went down. It had been going down prior to 1994 from the peak in, I think, the mid-80s was when violent crime was at or near its peak here in the U.S. And from 94 to 2004, it did nothing but go down. And it's continued to go down since the assault weapons ban sunsetted. So if anybody tells you blood in the streets, they're full of crap. Statistics and the history doesn't back up what they're trying to push and sell. It doesn't. And let's say hypothetically for a moment it did. There's tens of millions of ARs and AKs and various assault weapons, in the big old double air quotes, already in circulation, and there's no legal mechanism for the government to, like, force them to be destroyed or given up. They've tried before. It never works. Well, so you would have to grandfather them all in, which means the government is saying that this
class of weapons is so dangerous, we cannot allow normal, everyday Americans to like, who, by the way, pass a background check, because we still have those, but they cannot be allowed to go into a gun store, pass an FBI freaking background check to own one of these things. But they're not so dangerous that we can't wait like 40 or 50 or 60 years for everybody that has one to pass away of natural causes and then them be ostensibly surrendered to the state at that point. So, again, I fall under something I refer to as the nuclear weapons analogy. And it's, if something is so damn dangerous that you can't allow the people to have it, but the state gets to have it, I have questions. You know what I'm saying? Like, if the government wants to make, if somebody wants to make the argument that, like, well, people can't be trusted with nuclear weapons, I'm like, I might agree with you, but why the hell do we have a dementia patient with his finger on the button? That makes me nervous, too.
Right.
If it's, you know, if it's not good, people can't have hand grenades, but the freaking government can have, but right. Your local police force can have MRAPs? It's just, come on, guys. It's right. Not making any daggum sense. It's stupid. It's a stupid argument.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I mean, it's not good enough for the people, but, and that's the thing that cracks me up about the laws and stuff like that, that they're passing or have passed or trying to pass. It's people, the average citizen cannot have it. However, law enforcement, retired law enforcement, corrections, stuff like that, like, oh, no, they can have it. They're good. But the average citizen can't. Like, that irks me more than anything. And that's, and I would love to see if some pro-gun, if they really wanted to freaking spice up things, every time that one of these bills got presented, they would try to pass an amendment or do whatever they had to do to get the language said that, hey, if you're proposing this, you lose all funding, you lose all ability. It's against the law for you to have any armed protection. And it's against the law, and we're going to put it in there that police, law enforcement, military, everybody are subject to the same laws, the same rules as everybody else. If that was something that was going to be passed and that was required to be in every single bill, you would not see, I don't think you'd see any of these bills at all.
Now, Andrew, we both know rules for thee but not for me is a perfectly time-honored tradition in this country. And never would our betters, our elites, our learned men and women in office subject themselves to the rules that the plebs must live by. We poor, stupid, unwashed masses. You know better than that. They're important people. That's why they need, you know, people walking around them all the time to guard them from scary COVID coronaviruses while they get their hair done in the middle of a pandemic lockdown. Or get their boat out of storage.
Yeah.
We didn't forget about you, Gretchen. We remember.
Good old stretching Gretchen.
So, let's go ahead and finish out the doom and gloom since you've got me totally wound up about it. So, probably the two most recent bouts of ATF tomfoolery was they tried to, and I have to be really careful how I state this, because they didn't reinterpret it. They didn't do anything with a law, because ATF can't make laws. They reinterpreted. They published a rule. They published an opinion. They basically, you know, they waved their pen and said, we're making stuff illegal so that we can justify our existence as a federal agency, even though the executive branch, which the ATF is a part of, is supposedly, technically, expressly forbidden from legislating, because that falls under the legislature. And they're also not to determine whether or not something is constitutional, because that's supposed to be done by the judiciary. I mean, if any of y'all didn't pay attention in civics class, now would be a good time to go and Google all that stuff, because it's kind of important to know how your government's supposed to behave, even though, God Almighty, they don't behave that way. But they decided that the ATF decided that 80% frames... Like but we're now ghost guns. So if you can, now this is their language. If you can readily convert something into a firearm, it is now a firearm. That's what they said. And then they also, you know, played ping pong back and forth over pistol braces for the last 10 years or so about whether or not it was legal. And they finally put their foot down and said, if it has a pistol brace, it's probably an SBR and we're going to shoot your dog if you don't, you know, do the right thing and stop coloring outside the lines. And here's the thing, Andrew. Like, I was 12 when the original assault weapons ban, not the 94 assault weapons ban, was passed. But I don't remember, and I wasn't like super into guns at the time. I wasn't super into the Second Amendment community. Obviously, I was only 12. But like even up to 2004 when it sunsetted, I don't ever remember the ATF being the recipient of this level of widespread hatred as they are today. Like every time those idiots in their freaking cheap suits step out of line and publish a new rule, the reaction from the Second Amendment community is near across the board just loathing and derision. They're not the boogeyman. They're not anything that people are scared of. People make memes about these idiots. You know what I'm saying? The anniversary of Waco, Texas burning to the ground, they post on their social media a memorial about the ATF agents that were shot on that day. And the entire internet is ablaze with people like just dogging them out for days. The ATF went from being a once, I guess, quote unquote, respectable or respected government agency to being a meme. They're a joke. The Second Amendment community hates them almost universally. And that's encouraging to me because, like, you know, I remember a time when if you asked a group of people about the newest ATF rule, you get about half and half, with half being the crusty old fuds who would say, well, nobody needs a bump stock. And then the other half would be like, that's BS, that's an infringement. Slippery slope argument, whatever pot they fell into, they weren't down with that. And the other half would kind of throw everybody else the rule, saying, hell, that we're not getting involved. And I've seen that balance shift. Now there's more and more and more people. Every time the ATF even breathes about a new infringement, the community just goes nuts. It doesn't matter what it is. The answer from the chorus is a resounding, stop doing this. To the point where there's even a sizable contingency in Congress and among state governors and state attorney generals who are actively in the process of taking ATF to task right now today over the rules they're passing. It's a level of pushback I haven't seen in 20 years. Unless some old fart that was alive when the Hughes Amendment got put into effect, you know, remembers this differently than I've read.
So where's Stewart at?
Yeah, where is Stewart? But I mean, seriously, like from the historical accounts I've read, it wasn't the reaction we're getting now. And part of that could be the world of social media and the fact that we're so much better connected now and we're so much more aware of things now and able to rally the troops and build the community in the way we couldn't do it 20 years ago. But it's still very, very encouraging to see the reaction this yeah. unified.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though, is going back to really quick to the 8% stuff. I mean, they're getting shredded on it because people, like, they like to build firearms. It's been legal for hundreds of years. It's been legal to build your own firearm. And now it's all of a sudden, and the government, because they weren't getting anywhere on their push, they decided to, if you pay attention to, with over the last few years, the whole assault weapons ban or the whole assault weapon term, kind of like, it's became more mainstream than anything. It kind of just fell off the table a little bit, but now they're saying ghost guns. Like, if you notice over the last probably 5 years, the term ghost gun has really, really picked up steam within the anti-gun community mouth. And they state that it's any gun that cannot be traced back to a manufacturer. Well, you take a gun that's off, just comes off the street in a gang shooting, which happens more frequently than most, any kind of shooting. And as soon as they scrape off that serial number, that gun becomes untraceable. Yeah, they can see that, oh, hey, this is the make, model, and all this stuff, but they don't know where it came from. They don't have a serial number on it, so they don't know how to freaking track it. That's a ghost gun. And so they use that, they lump that into, to everything. And so the 80% frames, Poly 80 actually just signed on as a defendant. They've been fighting the ATF over the 80% stuff. And the ATF just got their hands slapped by a judge. And they Poly80, to my knowledge, they put all their stuff back online. You can go on Poly80's website and you can start buying 80% kits right now. The ATF lost their mind. They said, we don't care what the judge said. We are still, like, they're still going to try to go after them. They're still going to, any sales, they're still going to try to go after wreckers. They're still going to try to go after people buying stuff. And that is, like, that's so unconstitutional. Like, you're going against a judge's order. Like, that's with the whole Bruin stuff right now.
Before we get to Bruin, though, I did just want to point out, on top of everything that you just said, I do think it's important to point out that anytime you see statistics or you see mention made about ghost guns, I have to keep. Can I just have like a blanket air quotes, Andrew?
Mm-hmm.
Like we need a neon sign that's just constant air quotes, so I can just put that up behind me and then leave it up. Make my life a little simpler. But like you have to bear in mind that like most of what the government is calling ghost guns is usually stolen firearms with the serial numbers that have been obliterated. And that is a tremendously different item than an 80% lower you have milled out at your house. Or even better, a completely homemade firearm. And this is the part that drives me the craziest when ATF tries to say that anything that can be readily converted into a firearm is now a firearm. Like, over the course of this podcast, Andrew and us knowing each other, I have sent you pictures of homemade guns. I sent you a picture of a 2x6, a literal wooden 2x6 that somebody made into an AR lower, and it worked. They put in a hammer and, like, a magazine and had to hold the magazine in place because it wasn't a mag catch. But, like, somebody made a freaking – somebody, you know, took a piece of wood and made it into a working AR lower. People have made squirt guns – out of freaking stuff you find in a hardware store. Philip A. Luty, you know, that mad lad from the United Kingdom, spent two different prison terms in jail because he violated his country's firearm laws, and he built a pair of full-auto 9mm submachine guns in his shed with laws that are so much more restrictive than what we have. You can make shotguns and 9mm handguns out of water pipe. The term easily readily converted into a firearm is everything.
Well, yeah.
And that's the part that makes me crazy.
Right. And then the other thing that's funny is I want to throw it out there that there was a guy that he collected pop cans and he melted them down and he built an AK. He built an AK frame receiver, basically almost all out of like pop cans, a shovel, like all kinds of stuff, just around the house, and he built that stuff. So you can't tell me the signal is never going to die. I mean, we're always going to be able to build firearms. It's just a matter of and that's the thing is if you can go to a Home Depot, you can build a firearm. And that's what the politicians don't understand is we're always going to have that ability to build. And no law is ever going to stop that, especially when you're trying to be, especially with something coming from a tyrannical government.
Well, I mean, until somebody takes the DOJ to task for Operation Fast and Furious, I really don't want to hear anything from this government or any government about the arms that the average person owns.
Operation Fast and Furious, they're trying to destroy the evidence. The ATF, the government, they want to destroy any of the firearms that have been recollected and everything from any of that stuff, and they're looking to destroy evidence pointing to the government involvement in Fast and the Furious. You're going to start seeing with the Taliban, with us, with the United States leaving billions of dollars in equipment over on the over to the Taliban, you're going to start seeing that, like, we just made the Taliban one of the strongest armed militaries on Earth. And the technology has been leaked to China and Russia. And so good luck. Like, we no longer have some of the technological advantage that we did, especially with like our night vision, laser system, stuff like that. I mean, it's ridiculous what they left over there. And I mean, granted, I'm sure it really doesn't stay secret for very long anyway, but still the fact remains that the same government who left billions of dollars in hardware, firearms that as citizens we cannot own anyway, apparently they left them to terrorists. Just open it. Open the door. Here you go. Take what you want. And they tell us what we can and cannot own. They're trying to restrict our rights. That's what's funny.
This is analogous to Hunter Biden lecturing you about taking too many Tylenol for a headache.
Yeah.
Sorry if that one's a little too close. But since you brought the Bruin decision, the Bruin decision has happened. Anybody that's not familiar with that, you really should be familiar with that. The calls for the National Firearms Act to be struck down, like, and silencers and short barrel rifles individually being removed from the NFA, the Texas lawsuit, which is trying to push, I think it was Kentucky years ago, tried this scheme, but they didn't really follow through on it. But Texas is making the same argument that this other state did years ago, which is if a suppressor or silencer is manufactured in the state of Texas and never leaves the state of Texas, then the federal government via interstate commerce has no right to regulate it. I'm seeing efforts to unwind some of these gun control efforts that I've never seen before in 20 years of being part of this community. Mm-hmm. And that's encouraging. Like I said, when Kentucky passed the law that they did, and then they immediately stood by and let two of their citizens be hung out to dry by the federal government, I've said over and over and over that until a state really gets some skin in the game and puts their foot down, the passing a law doesn't matter. But Texas has actually taken this to court and has taken ATF to task and forcing them to explain to the judge, how do you have justification to regulate this if it never crosses state lines? Because the last time the National Firearms Act got really drug hard, that was the argument. It crossed the state lines, the federal government can regulate it via interstate commerce. Now they're using their own prior ruling and saying, if it doesn't cross state lines, what else have you got? And the ATF has tried to say that a silencer is not a firearm, which I guess technically is not. But if it's not a firearm, then why the hell are you treating it like a firearm? Even though I'm pretty sure the original legalese of the National Firearms Act specifically refers to it as a firearm. Mm-hmm. So it's like they are so backed into a corner by all of this web of interlacing bullcrap that they have no good leg to stand on anymore. Like they've been hauled into court so many times. And they have squeaked by so many rulings with some half-hearted nonsense that the judge just took as gospel that now they've given our side so many prior rulings to use against them. I don't know how much longer the NFA is going to survive. Like, maybe I'm just being an optimist for once.
That'll be a day to celebrate. I mean, if the NFA goes away, especially if they remove it or alter it to take suppressors, short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns off, stuff like that. Like, I mean, it should be abolished altogether. Because, I mean, I should be able to own destructive devices. And, like, and that's the thing that cracks me up is the whole ownership thing. You can go out and you can build. If you want to, you can go out and build the stuff. That has not stopped people. If they're hell-bent on a crime, they're hell-bent on hurting people, the NFA has never stopped anybody from committing that crime. It stopped law-abiding citizens from expressing their right. If I want to sit there and buy freaking C4 and all kinds of stuff, and I end up blowing myself up, then you know what? I just took myself out of the gene pool, which probably should have been done anyway. So,
first of all, every time somebody mentions C4, my mind goes back to that meme about how the opposite of silly putty is serious putty.
Yeah.
And that's what C4 will always be to me, is serious putty. But yeah. Anyway. But the other thing that you just called to my mind on top of everything else was there's a lawsuit, and I'm remiss because I haven't followed it, and I haven't kept an eye on like how far it is through the court system. But there's literally a law, or there's literally a legal challenge crawling through the court system right now that is challenging the Hughes Amendment. Mm-hmm. It's challenging the ban on new production machine guns. Now, it's not going at it head first in the whole you can't regulate machine guns, Second Amendment, yada yada yada. This is brilliant. This is genius. It's cute even. They are literally alleging that because the government is refusing to, because this gentleman, apparently he wanted to make a machine gun, he
filed ATF paperwork to add a new machine gun to the friggin' NFA, you know, to the NFA haylogs. He sent in a $200 check. He was prepared, just like you would if you were going to go buy a transferable machine gun. He did that, but he tried to do it for a new production machine gun. I think, was it a Form 1 or a Form 4? Which is the one?
Form 1.
Okay, on a Form 1. The ATF denied him. They said, you can't make a new machine gun. He took him to court and is trying to get the court to force the ATF to accept the tax money, because the lawyer is correctly pointing out that if the ATF refuses to accept the tax, they have forfeited it. So basically he's saying you cannot simultaneously refuse to accept this man's tax payment and hold him liable for not sending it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been watching it really closely because it is not the foremost thing on my radar. It's just not far enough through the court system yet. But to know that there is somebody that is in a courtroom right now that is literally like holding the ATF's ass over the skillet about you have to take this man's money and let him make a machine gun is the most hilarious thing I've ever heard in my life, because he is literally beating them at their own game with their own nonsense. He's not saying, I can make a machine gun, you can't stop me. He's saying, please take my money and give me my permission slip. And they're saying no, and be like, then I'm taking you to court to force you to. And that's amazing. I mean, it's aggravating, but it's hilarious at the same time. And I have to find my entertainment where I can. Anyway, the thing of it is, Andrew, all these discussions about short barrel rifles, short barrel shotguns, suppressors, machine guns, even though there's a whole lot more people than there used to be who are all about those things, it's still a relatively smaller segment of the firearms community. But here's where I get a little bit, here's where I start to perk up a little bit. I looked up firearm sales statistics from the last 20 years. In 2000, there were estimated 8 million firearms sold in the U.S., 14 million in 2012, and 22 million in 2020. That is the kind of escalation of firearm sales that is encouraging me, because it means one of two things. Now, realistically, you and I both know that there's people just like you in that list who just love guns and want them all and is going to buy guns every damn year, no matter what. But what we've also seen the last several years is this huge uptick in first-time gun buyers. There's been a huge uptick in women walking into gun stores for the first time buying firearms, racial minorities, groups of people who never before purchased a firearm ever in life and are suddenly seeing the light and walking into gun stores and buying their first firearm. And no, they're not all really high-end Daniel Defense or ARs. A lot of them are probably Glocks and High Points and whatever they get a hold of, because they need a firearm for self-protection. But two things come with that. First of all, anybody, and I said this to somebody the other day and they agree with me readily, and I hope most people would, no one who has ever walked into a gun store and bought a firearm can ever again be lied to for the rest of their life about what purchasing a firearm is really like. They can never again be told about how you can mail order a gun to your front door, because they know that's bullcrap. They can never again be told how you can get a gun without a background check, because they know that's bullcrap. They can never again be lied to about any of these things. Anybody that lives in a state with a waiting period that wanted a gun like tomorrow because they're riding all up and down the friggin' country, those people will have vivid memories for their entire lives of sitting at their house for 10 to 14 days or whatever it was, waiting for the waiting period to expire, hoping their house wasn't hit. And I say, good. It breaks my daggum heart that people in those states have to live with waiting periods to buy firearms when they otherwise are legal law-abiding citizens. However, if you voted for it, you deserve it. And if you knew you lived in a state where there was a 10 or 14 day or however many day waiting period, and you waited until the day you thought you needed a gun to go out and get one, guess what, bub? You totally missed the idea of what a firearm is. The firearm is like a fire extinguisher. You don't wait till the house is on fire, then run out and go get one. It's not how this works. And we own firearms for the same reason we own fire extinguishers, because the fire department is not sitting in my front yard waiting for something to pop off.
Yeah, the I'm glad to see the ownership has skyrocketed, and that number is on both sides. It's people who used to be anti-gun, or maybe they saw the light of day, and now they pro-gun. Something happened in their life. How many are first-time gun buyers? I mean, women for self-defense, men for self-defense. I mean, the list goes on and on, and I mean it's good to see, because the more firearms that we have out there, it's going to be harder to, one, when the government wants to sit there and ban them completely one day down the road, when it will happen, it's going to be a lot harder. And hopefully the fight will continue.
And here's something else. So 20 years ago, I remember the market for ARs and AKs being very different than what we have today. I remember almost barrels of cheap SKSs and AKs, but nobody was buying them. I mean, there was a time in this country you could get an AR or an AK for comparatively almost no money. And even AR-15s were, I'm talking about pre 94 assault weapons ban, but ARs and AKs just weren't that commonly sought after. Everybody was looking for M14s and maybe some M1 surplus guns and Woodstock hunting rifles, and they buy handguns. But this idea of the crotchety old FUD who says nobody needs an AR and AK. I mean, that's a meme for a reason. For a lot of years, a lot of the gun community had that idea that the plastic fantastics, nobody needed those things, we don't need high capacity magazines, we don't need assault weapons and all this other bullcrap. And what I'm seeing out of the community now is this second coming of people that are saying, I absolutely need an AR. I need 3 or 4 ARs. I need about 30 magazines. I need, a couple thousand rounds of ammunition. I need body armor. I need night vision. I need all that stuff. It's like everything that the FUD once told you has been completely turned around on its head, because now those are absolutely the things people are seeking and adding to their personal armories, because people just naturally understand that if someone is attacking your family, you don't go with standing out in the front yard with a 308 bolt action with 3 rounds in the magazine. You get the firearm that is most appropriate to deal with problems, that has controllable recoil, that can put lots of firepower on target very quickly, that is easy to use. You go for the weapons that our military has used for generations because they work. And the minute they start issuing, young soldiers straight out of AIT, friggin' old FUD hunting rifles, I'll consider trading in my AR and AK, but until then, I don't want to hear it. There's a daggum good reason why that's what the military uses. And the police, while we're at it. I can remember a time in this country where it would have been considered odd for your average law enforcement officer running around in a patrol car to have a full auto short barrel, AR or AR M16 or M4 in their cruiser, just rolling around. I understand there's an argument that they need that, but if they need it, why doesn't the average citizen? 2001 ARs were around what price? Andrew, I don't know if you have any earthly idea. I'll be the first to admit that in 2001, I was 11. No, 2001. 2001, I was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, bearing in mind that this is still before the assault weapons ban sunsetted, you were pretty limited on what you could get.
Yeah.
And AR prices were probably highly inflated at that point because...
Yeah, I don't remember.
They weren't in such ready circulation.
Yeah, I don't remember what the prices were. I know it didn't necessarily stop people from buying them, because people still would go out and buy them. But, yeah.
No. What I need is a crotchety old fart that has a good memory and is into guns. He would be able to tell us stuff like that.
If you know anybody, let me know.
I mean, I know somebody that fits that description, but he's not on right now. He's going to complain later about why he wasn't invited. And here's the other thing, and this is something that, like, I know is very near and dear to your heart, my heart, a lot of people's hearts, but, like, probably the one biggest change I've seen in the gun community, and it's the one that, to me, is the most, it's the most heartening, it's the most encouraging. I can remember a time when the idea of the average person, just like a homeowner, a normal person, getting legit tactical training, learning how to run a firearm while moving, while getting off the X, learning how to reload under pressure, engage multiple targets, all that kind of stuff would have been considered really, really unusual. I can remember a time when most training companies wouldn't teach civilians in discussion. They would train law enforcement and military, wouldn't touch civilians at all. And most of them openly said it was because we don't think civilians need that training. Now, there are still companies that fall under that banner, but they're a minority, not the rule. I'm seeing more and more companies that are advertising fairly high-level tactical training for the average person. I'm seeing more and more people seeking out that training. I'm seeing people who have come around to the idea that if I'm owning firearms as a method of self-defense, I have to be trained how to use these to defend myself. And that is a higher level of training than shooting a box of ammo once a year at a flat range, which is what the average person does. That change, in combination with the embracing of ARs and AKs and other semi-automatic magazine-fed firearms, in combination with all the first-time gun owners, in combination with the average age of the gun buyer dropping, that was another thing I didn't have in the bullet points. But, like, you know, for a while, the average age of gun owners was increasing, and that's scary because it means that the younger generations weren't buying guns, and then all of a sudden it started coming back down. And a lot of people have alluded to that fact that that might be like the Call of Duty generation, you know, these younger guys that grew up playing first-person shooters, and then they find out, oh, wait, you mean I can go buy a SCAR? I can go buy a FAL? I can buy those things? And that becomes their gateway into getting into firearms. And if video games gets them into guns, then great. Please, for God's sakes, go get training. But, like, all these things are combining to me to create a new version of the gun community that I am hoping is more inclusive than what it used to be. I'm hoping is more politically active than it used to be, is more willing to advocate for our rights, and is less tolerant of government tomfoolery. I'm hoping somewhere along the way, the very thing you pointed out that about people getting dogged out because they have the cheap boy rifle, I'm hoping that becomes less and less prevalent over time. It's never going to go away completely, but I believe it is getting less common. I have to believe that. If I remember correctly, ARs were going for $700 to $1,100. I think that was an answer to the earlier question about back in 2001, ARs were what price? But I don't know what your thoughts are, Andrew, about all that. Like, that's where I see things have come to, and I hope that's where things continue to go. I really want the gun community to be the community that welcomes everyone in and then tries to point everybody in the right direction. And, like, if you get into this because you just like wall hangers, that's fine. But I would hope that people are encouraging new gun buyers to understand that just because you bought a Glock and the next assault weapons ban that the government's pushing doesn't affect you doesn't mean you don't fight it. It just means they're going to ban your Glock tomorrow. Like, we all have to fight. We all have to fight together. And the fact that there's so many million new gun owners coming into our ranks means we should be developing a more robust and a more active base. But like you said earlier, that means we have to not fight against each other.
Yeah, I mean, like I said at the top of the show, together was it? Separated we fall, together we conquer? I don't remember how I said it. Anyway, we need to come together is what comes down to. Us as a gun community, we need to rally around our Second Amendment. And on top of that, we need to rally around all of our amendments, because if you look through the Constitution, I can guarantee you can see where the government has eroded one of many of the Constitution or of the our constitutional rights. So we need to come together. We need to work together. We need to fight this crap. The only way that they're going to stop doing it is when we really fight and we come together and they know that they can't do it. That's in Michigan right now. They're working on a bunch of gun control. And so I guess I last time I heard, it's starting to lose steam. I contacted my reps in Michigan here. And the last thing I heard was it's starting to lose a little bit of steam because now there's some Democrats that are in pro-gun areas that their people are reaching out saying, you vote for this, we're going to start pushing for a recall. And there's a large recall movement starting to brew for a lot of reps. And if they care about their job, which they care about money, so yes, they care about their job. Look at Peter Meyer. Peter Meyer, he didn't get recalled, but because of his stance on a few things, he lost his reelection bid because of some of his stances. So it can happen. We need to come together. That's period dot discussion, end of discussion. I don't care if you don't like bump stocks. Oh, that's awesome. That's your opinion. But that doesn't mean that you should say, well, if I don't want it, then no one else should have it. Like, that's stupid. That's just like saying, if you don't, since I don't have a two-story house, you shouldn't have a two-story house. Something like that. Like, that's dumb. Flick yourself in the eyeball.
No, I do think you're on. I do think what you're saying is correct, though. Like the old adage is, we're either going to stand together or swing. Or we're either going to stand together or swing separately. Mm-hmm. Swing by the neck in this case, and I think that is something worth pointing out. I mean, either we as a, and let's broaden this out from just gun community, Second Amendment advocates, but either we as Americans stand up, pull our pants out of our butt, and tell our government, knock off this nonsense, stay in the fireplace, or we need to go get a bucket of water and put the fire out. And I know that's a really unpopular thing to say. There's a lot of people that get really nervous when you start talking about putting the fire in the fireplace out because then the house gets cold. But if the fire gets out of the fireplace, the house burns to the ground. So we have two options at this point. Either we put the fire back in the fireplace and tell it that's where you need to keep your butt, or we have to extinguish the fire to keep the house from burning down. There is no middle ground here. Now, I think that the fire can be kept in the fireplace. I'm a libertarian at the end of the day, not an anarchist. So I always go back to the idea that, like, government is a necessary evil. We have tolerated to the smallest degree possible to accomplish the things that government is supposed to accomplish, being basically like national defense and interstate issues, or signing treaties. And other than that, they need to keep their hands off everything. And that is the difference between libertarian and anarchist. Anarchist says no state, no reason. And libertarian says tiny government, tiny state, do very little. And then there's what we have today, which is the fire out of the fireplace, spreading across the carpet, running up the walls, getting ready to hit the peak of the roof. If you don't think things are that bad, start looking into stuff your government's doing and all the miraculous and wonderful ways that they are doing their best to put the Constitution into the paper shredder with a smile. But you got anything else before we roll this one out?
Nope.
All right, guys. Matter of Facts podcast is going to head out the door. If you know a new shooter, please, for God's sakes, encourage them to buy ammo and mags. Encourage them to get training. Take them to the range and let them make friends with other first-time gun owners. And please, for the love of God, understand that just owning a gun is not enough. We all have to push to have our rights respected, because if not, we're not going to have them for very long. So the days of being able to be apolitical and the days of being able to say, well, I don't like to be into politics, have passed. Either you take an interest in politics, or politics is going to take an interest in you. If this isn't the hill you want to die on, pick a hill. We'll get to it eventually. Matter of Facts podcast heading out the door. Good night.
See ya.